What up? Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Dealer Talk Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking all about service. So make sure to grab a pen, grab some paper, take some notes, and let's get this thing rolling. Fixed operations, one of the most misunderstood parts of the dealership. Tons of opportunity to generate revenue, to generate profits, but most importantly, it is the most effective long-term success strategy for your dealership. Also, don't forget, if you want to participate on the podcast during season 2 and put your own episode on the air, hit us up at www.dealertalk.biz and let's talk about that. Let's definitely work on getting you on the show. Hit us up. We'd love to have you. Let's get as many people as we can involved and connected on this platform. All right. So let's go on to the episode. Here we go. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Dealer Talk. So today I'm kind of riding solo. Eric is not feeling well, so he's not joining us. Let's just dive right into the conversation today. We got a great guest. We're going to have an amazing conversation about fixed operations. This person has been with Toyota for many years. He's been with Group One for many years, and it's just a wealth of knowledge when it comes to fixed operations. As most of you know, fixed operation is near and dear to my heart. That's where I started my professional career, and so I'm just very excited to kind of be able to add these types of conversations to the show. Before I make the introduction, I just wanted to remind everybody that the website is now up. We'll definitely make sure to put a link in the notes. So make sure to check it out. Go there to leave us your questions so that we can bring them up to the guests and give you some practical advice that you can take back to your day-to-day. So without further ado, let me introduce our guest for today, Mr. Tim Stockwell. Tim, what's going on, sir? How are you?
I'm doing great, Herb. Good morning.
Hey, man. It's great to have you on the show. I'm excited to have this conversation. Before we get things rolling here, can you just give the audience a little recap of your background?
Sure. Started in the car business at the early age of 17. When I turned 18, I got promoted in a small chain of stores to being a service manager. So I worked in the independents until about 2001, and then got my first dealership job, and then promoted up. Ended up with AutoNation, a service manager, and then parts and service director with them. And then over to Group One, where I spent over a decade working with them and doing some fix ops with a couple different stores with them. And then now have went on to the next experience and working with a smaller company that has just 3 rooftops that we're trying to turn around and develop them.
Right on, man. Right on. So, that's a little bit of a change, right? Change of pace for you.
It's quite the change, yeah. It's a good change, but quite the change, yeah.
All right, man. So what's the difference? And I know you've only been doing this for a couple of months, I believe, or a couple of weeks, rather. But what's the difference, right, when you're managing a big, fixed operations department versus something that's a little bit smaller? Like, what things contrast there?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's the size of your ship, right? I mean, I would say 100 people under me at the previous job. We're doing thousands of hours a month. But fortunately, I'd been there for a while and built that. So, I won't say it's running itself, but everything's in place. The people are in place. So day-to-day operations are much smaller, right? It's fine-tune adjustments when you have a store that size and you've been there for 10 years. So when you go to the new one, now everything, you're a fresh set of eyes. You see all the problems that are in front of you that you need to fix. So you just start chipping them away. And really, I think it's all process, right? You know, the stores that I go into, including my new ones, it's just about having a process. And if there's anything that hopefully we take out of this today, my message to most service managers, you know, in any situation is just have a process, because I see a lot of them that don't, unfortunately.
Yeah, man, right on. I totally agree with that. I think that that's key. But, you know, and I guess that would depend, right? Depends on the store, depends on the market that you're in. But is there, you know, just as a takeaway, is there like a pillar, so to speak, like, you know, fundamentals that you think, you know, would be something that, every should at least make sure that they have that?
Well, I mean, there's several pillars, right, to what you want to accomplish. I mean, you got to have a plan. I mean, I think every situation's a bit different, Herb, when you walk into a store. I mean, you know, what is the problem and you have to fix it. But I think as far as what you grow, I'm a firm believer in, you know, ethics and honesty. So you want to put together a team that first and foremost cares about your customer. So, I mean, I think a pillar is always going to build trust and rapport with your employees and with your customer. And when you get that, that's when you become successful in the parts and service business. And when you have, you know, retention and you have CSI and you're making gross. So I guess to answer your question is for me, it's always about the people, right? Start, get a, analyze your people, see what you got, and just start drilling the message into them from day one about what we're going to be. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, no, totally, totally. Yeah. I mean, I think I totally agree. I think it starts with the people for sure. But what about between departments? Because that's one of the things that I've noticed at a lot of stores, not all stores, but, you know, enough where, you know, I feel the need to kind of bring it up here and kind of get your perspective. But, you know, you have sales, you have service, that instead of working together, most of the times it seems like they're working kind of against each other, or at least as separate, you know, as individuals, right? Do you find that that's the case in your experience? And, you know, what do you think that people can do to kind of overcome that?
Well, they have to communicate. I certainly don't have that problem. From used car managers to general sales managers, right, to your parts department manager, who's your main partner. You have to have communication, and you have to be all moving in the same direction, right? So what's expected of me, what's expected of you. I know that it's easier for me because I'm a little bit of a stronger personality. And I think for some guys that might be a little more reserved, it could be a little more difficult. But as long as you ask the question, you know, what are we doing for each other? And then, you know, as long as you're doing that and you have a process, I think that works itself out. I've always looked at a dealership as a bunch of little islands, right? And you know, nobody really runs over to help until one of the islands is on fire. There's smoke coming up, right? And I think when you have a good dealership, it's not like that. I think when all the managers are on the same page, those problems don't exist. So I guess to answer that is, you know, communicate and just know what's expected of you and what you expect of them. And I think it works itself out.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's certainly some stores, like you said, that you can just, as you walk in, you just feel there's a difference, right? You feel that the way that they're operating is different than the norm. You know, and, you know, especially when you're at a good store, right? It just runs differently.
But what makes it a good store, right? I mean, and I know what you're talking about with the feeling, but what makes that occur? It's leadership, right?
Yeah, no, totally. You made a good point right now. You talked about, you know, understanding each other and kind of collaborating with each other. And I think that that's key. You know, so it's just interesting to me how sometimes that's not, it just doesn't feel like it's the average, you know, within the industry. It just feels different.
Sure. And I think from what I've seen, a lot of it starts at the top. So if a general manager, you know, isn't motivating or leading his people, then you can have that feeling, you know, when you walk into a store. You definitely can tell when you go into a store where everybody's engaged and everybody's present. And those are, you know, those are usually your successful stores. I mean, you've been in a ton of them and you've seen it. So, and all I can, you know, you can't teach somebody that. You just you go find that or you create that, right, is what I would recommend for people. It's certainly no fun being stuck in a in the dealership when you're, you know, it's an unhappy place. So you know me, I try to create that spark. We got to spend 10 to 12 hours together every day in the fix ops world. And even up front, some of those sales guys pull long days too. So you want to try and have some fun, and you certainly want to be there.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. It just makes for a better experience, right? And that's going to permeate out into all the customers and the people that are walking into the store. So I totally agree. So one of the questions that I kind of wanted to talk to you about here, is about the technicians, right? Because there's a, you know, there's just a little bit of a trend that I'm noticing, and I've been noticing for you know, the past couple of years, but it seems like there's less and less technicians coming into the business. You know, I've read tons of articles of, you know, how that's starting to impact the industry. And I just kind of wanted to bring that topic up here with you about, you know, is it, you know, do you see that a trend where we're having less and less technicians? How can we kind of overcome that? What are some of your strategies that you can share to kind of help all the other managers that are tuning into this podcast?
Sure. I mean, technicians is a huge issue, right? A lot of our labor force in the country right now. I mean, we need young adults to build houses, to work on cars, right? To be electricians and plumbers. So we certainly strategize a lot on technicians. And I think the common things you're seeing is signing bonuses, techs certainly being paid the proper wage. I think the biggest thing you can do to attract techs is show them a path, right? You've got a lot of independent guys out there that feel that they're not worthy to work in a car dealership, when that's certainly not the case, right? I think you should be working at a dealership because of the way that technology is advancing. You know, this is the only place you're going to really get the training. It trickles into the aftermarket, but it certainly takes some time. But, you know, with today's cars, we see you can't even replace a windshield now, right, without having to come back to the dealership and have everything recalibrated. So,
yeah.
I think that if you get a young tech in and you show him where he needs to go and how to get there, then you're doing a good job and we can continue to grow them. I think when you don't pay attention to your techs and you're not paying them properly and you can't staff your store properly and you can't keep your customers because you don't know how to treat your customers, you're going to lose, you know, not just your tech, but you're going to lose your employees, you know, in the other areas also. So I personally don't find a problem with recruiting techs because, you know, I believe I can, I speak tech, right? I understand what they go through. I show them the respect that they deserve as a craft, you know, that they have, and, you know, support them with, you know, the shop with proper equipment and, you know, an overall good work environment. So the biggest loss of tech that I see is usually the younger guys because their path, they want to get there faster than their skill set is, you know, allowing them. Some of these kids come out of trade school owing $35,000 and, you know, we're putting them on as a lube tech and let's face it, that's, you know, you're not making a whole lot of money.
Right.
So unfortunately they either have to move on because they found the next guy to give them a couple bucks more an hour or to prematurely give them that tech position that they're probably not ready for. So those are the things you have to battle and you have to understand, and hopefully you can make a good quick relationship. So you can give them the advice that either they'll listen to, or maybe you can be the one that moves them up. Maybe even if it's a little sooner than they should be, you know, by giving them a good mentor because you see something in them. So, but I do believe that it's certainly an epidemic. And I think that people are getting better about bringing some industry back, like vocational things in school. I know in my community, there's really only one high school doing it now, right? And we've hired a couple kids out of there and looked at some ROTC things. But you know, we need to be talking about it. We need to be getting kids excited about working on cars and those other industries again. And I think we'll get there. I think it's going to be okay.
Do you think that the atmosphere has changed? And here's what I mean by that. So when I was starting up, I started up, as I mentioned to you, I was a lube tech and a tire technician. And man, I wanted to be a tech, a full tech, because it just seemed like coolest job in the whole operation. These guys were having a bunch of fun all the time. There was a sense of camaraderie between the guys in the shop. And as time has kind of passed on, that seems to have kind of dissipated to a degree. It became more of a job, you know what I mean? But with a different feel. Do you think that's part of there's a loss of charm there to the profession itself?
Yeah, absolutely. I think anything that we do, I mean, you and I were talking right before we started this about careers and how we stay motivated in what we do. So I certainly think that if you're a tech, if you're a counter guy, if you're a car salesman, right, you have to want to be that, and you have to force yourself, like all of us do at some point or another, to focus every day and own the day. And I certainly think that, you have the right people. And that could take a while in a shop too, right? Is because if you got the guys that are creating not the greatest place to work, that could chase some of your people and have some of your tech loss too, and discourage a young Herb who's a, tire tech to want to move up, right? So I think that, again, it comes down to leadership and you have to create that culture. And that spreads down through your leadership, being your team leaders or your shop foreman, your expert techs, and all the way down to those entry level guys.
Right on, man. Yeah, I like that. So kind of switching gears here a little bit. So you mentioned retention earlier, and I kind of wanted to talk about that because probably one of my biggest pet peeves when it comes to, I'm kind of starting out the question, I'm going to talk about just customer acquisition, right? So I see that dealers spend tons of money trying to get new customers, just trying to go out into the marketplace, which, by the way, the market's going to do what the market's going to do, right? We can't generate more business. All we can do is take market share away from the competitors. So we have this, pool, if you will, of customers or potential buyers that have already said yes to the dealership, either by purchasing or by continuing to service their vehicles there. But all that is happening, or the potential for that, is in service. Yet the management seems to focus more on going into the marketplace and getting new customers. Do you see that? Do you agree with that? Do you think that there should be more mining happening or more effort put onto the customer that you already have?
Well, absolutely. I think it's kind of a two-part question, really, right? Because what is the situation? And in my last store where you would come visit me at, we had plenty of customers, right? So I really didn't, in that particular situation, I didn't need to go out and mine for more. Now, maybe the sales department is obviously going to go search for some retail car deals in a different way. But as far as me for service, I just needed to take care of the customers that I had, because I wasn't at capacity, but getting close to capacity, right? So now go over to the store I'm at now. Now I will need to go advertise to these customers to bring them in, because unfortunately we've had a defection rate there, right? So we're going to have to use your services and get some creative marketing to bring a customer in. But I think as long as you are taking care of your customer, and that key word in our industry now is retention, as long as your customers continue to come to you, then marketing is just something that's keeping you relevant, right? And just giving them your latest communication that you want to offer them, a buy three, get fourth for a dollar type piece, right? But I hope that they're going to come to me anyways, right? And my philosophy on that, I think as long as, again, we're taking care of people, marketing is a tool that's in your toolbox, but it's not the go-to every time, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, no. And we've had this conversation before during our in-person visits, but I think that, sometimes you don't need to do marketing, right? It depends. Sometimes, if you don't understand what's going on in your shop, you could be paying to lose money, right? You can be paying to bring customers that are not actually going to generate business for you. They're not going to generate a profit, if you will, just because your operation is not, optimal. So before you try to get more people into the shop, you have to definitely make sure that you understand your, what exactly is going on. But how, what about you know, the servicing the customer that's walking in, especially when you have high volume? It just seems like a daunting task, right? You have all this influx coming in. You have your the standard for the consumer now is very, very high, right? You know, quick in and out services sort of a deal. They expect all these different amenities. You know, how do you do that, man? Like in your experience, you know, from your last position.
Well, I mean, you have to be organized. And I think in my situation, we are very heavily dependent on appointments, so you can prepare for it, so you know what you have coming in. Some of the other stores that I was mentoring had really didn't have a structured appointment process. So you might have 30 people walking at 7. You might have 5. You could have 100 people that day. You might have 55. And to me, that's the unknown. And it's not the particular way that I like to do it. I'm not saying it didn't work for some folks, but for me, I want to build my customer base. I want to be more structured. So we would pretty much be 90% appointment based, right? Because we had our customers trained to do that. So every day, you're seeing 150 people booking an appointment, 160 people booking an appointment, right? And then we'd still leave room for that 30 to 40 walk-in with the end goal of trying to get, you know, a couple hundred cars a day processed. So I think it starts there, Herb. You got to have your appointment set so your guys know what's coming in for them. They can be prepared, and hopefully they're doing that. And then you got to have a process. You know, we have a write-up process, a service advisor process that it's, you know, every customer, every time. Does that happen? You know, probably not. But, you know, our job as management is to make sure that it's happening as much as possible with our people. And you only do that by being out there, you know, walking around and paying attention, right? Unfortunately, a lot of managers get stuck in their offices and, you know, kind of take their eye off what's important. And that's the interaction between your staff and your customer.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And you talked about appointments. And it's funny because I've been having a lot of conversations with the store I work with on that whole deal. But here's you know, I don't want to say fact, but there is, like, you know, a lot of information out there on scheduling, right? So one article in particular that I read off of, I believe it was Fixed Ops Journal, talked about the utilization of schedulers, right? A lot of the customers don't even know that dealerships have these schedulers, and if they do, they don't know how to use it. They don't know how to, you know, engage with it. And this article had statistics per brand on the usage of schedulers for each of those brands. And it was really low, man. It was maybe, I think the top store was 20% or something like that. So what's, you know, let's talk about that for a second. Like, in your opinion, what's the way to educate your customers about scheduling their appointments, right? Because that's critical to your operation. If you're not scheduling and you're getting inundated with walk-ins, that's going to mess up your whole day, right?
It can. Yeah, it certainly can. Our process is, you know, education, right? You want to show them. Obviously, in Toyota's world, one of their Pro ASM questions is, did we offer to schedule your next service appointment? And for some reason, that seems to be difficult for some service advisors. But, you know, if you really look at what that's doing, and the way I teach my service advisors is, you want to become that guy, that service advisor for life for that customer, right? That's your end game. And the only way you do that is by building a relationship. And one is by either giving him the opportunity to book with you or you booking that customer for yourself, right? So giving the customer an app, for instance, is going to allow him to go into your scheduler and book an appointment with you, right? Obviously, your work schedule's in there, so they should be able to pick the day they want, and your availability should be there. If not, they can go to, you know, your next available day. So that's number one. Is I recommend a mobile app for your customers. Once you get that on their phone, they're pretty committed to you, I think. And then number two is, you know, the in-store staff. If you have a BDC, they're usually going to. They're going to use your scheduler. And when they're doing that, they're going to get the email from the customer. So now you're locking them in that way. And then just getting the customer to also go online and doing it. And if you make it easy, like I'm new here. Instead of having to go in and put in all that information, I think the more questions you have when you're trying to get the customer to book the appointment online, they're just going to exit out of it, right? And they're just going to want to maybe make a phone call and get scheduled in that way. But I think it's just constant education. It's part of the advisor process to explain how we do business, you know, in whatever your store is, and just start laying that foundation out for every customer. And they get it. You know, we have to teach the customers how we want to do business with them, and they'll do it. You know,
no, that's critical right there, what you just said. I think that's the key. But it's, and you know, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with process, right? You got to make sure that it's part of the process and it's done every time, right? Otherwise, you know, it's just not going to stick.
100%, Herb. I think everything is process, at least that I've found, and all my successes come from, you know, letting people be who they are. We don't want robots out there, right? You got to let, you know, their charisma and their energy, you know, come out. And that's because customers, service advisors have a rough job, right? And they see the majority of, well, all your customers usually in a dealership, right? So they say sales sells the first car, service sells every other car after that. And I believe that to be true. I believe the whole team is going to sell, you know, cars together. But these service advisors, it's a rough job, and they can get off their process just because days can be hectic. And the more you keep people on the process, I think definitely the more successful everyone's going to be. You know, the customer's going to have a better experience. The advisor's going to have a better place, you know, to work and feel better about his job. And then, of course, you know, management's going to have a better run store. So process, process, process.
Yes, sir. I agree. All right. So I'm going to take this you know, a far out place, man. So come along this journey with me for a second. So
I've
been reading a lot about AI and having a lot of conversations about what does that mean for service in particular. You know, and it's gotten to a place where it's, you know, we're talking about kiosks and, you know, customers driving up and, you know, inputting their regular maintenance into a kiosk type of a situation. Where do you see this whole AI in service, just based on your experience? You know, do you think it's going to, you know, it's going to lend for impact? Is that, do you think that that would be positive, negative, or do you think that, you know, that's not something that's going to affect service as much as people are talking about?
I think that it's obviously going to affect service because we're technology driven, right? And I think eventually we are going to get there to where, you know, unfortunately we're going to replace humans. We're already doing it at grocery stores, right? So I think that I don't like it personally because I built my career on actually speaking with people and building rapport and building trust and creating that relationship. And I know that, you know, things are changing, right? And people are more accustomed to using our devices and they're okay with that. So I think somewhere in the middle is where we're going to be. I've used the tablets a lot in the drive and I've watched interaction with the tablets that are available in the automotive industry right now. And if you guys can make it work to where I feel it's an acceptable tool, unfortunately, a lot of the other people they're just staring at a tablet and they're not having any interaction with their customer. So although it's effective and there's some great technology with the tablet, as far as what you can do out of the car is awesome, right? But what's left is the experience. There's nothing there that makes it a personable experience to where we're going to become customers and a business. We're going to be partners now for life, right? That I don't think that's happening anymore. And I think that if the experience is decent, people will come back. And I think that's probably what you're going to get with tablets. Like, okay, it's just the process. Now I have to go there. I'm going to select my 30K. You know, I'm going to sit in the waiting room for 2 hours and my name's going to come up on a board. And, you know, there's going to be a nice person that cashiers me out, or I'm going to pay online and off I go, right? So I think it's inevitable, Herb. I'm not a fan of it. Just for the reasons I said, I think that, you know, we still need to be taking care of people as people and not as computers. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. You know, I like that you say the people aspect of it, because, you know, and just to, this is, you know, somewhat of an example that could apply to this conversation. But McDonald's, right? You go now and they won't even take your order at the desk. You got to go to that, those kiosks and put your order there before you can walk up to the counter, which is super weird to me because, if you're walking up and you want that human interaction, why would you not be able to get that? So on the service side, I mean, I think that there could be convenience in there, but I totally agree. I think that that's going to be such a weird process, but we'll see, time will tell how that whole thing develops. But, dude, it's been awesome to have you on the show, man. A lot of good tips. I think that there's a lot of takeaways from this conversation. Would love to have you back on in the future. Before we close things off, there's always one question I ask everybody that comes on the show, and that's, where do you see the automotive industry headed in the next 5 years and why?
Oh, boy. From my lens, being on the fixed side, I think we just talked about it. I think it's going to be technology. That's going to be, game changers on both in the car, for fixing the vehicle, but also that technology that we're going to be using in the service drive. I think that people don't want to probably purchase a car the way they do now. I think that people are going to be more like an Amazon type thing, where you're going to go pick out your car online and then you're just going to go pick it up. So I think the automotive industry is going to advance. People still want cars. People are still going to buy cars. I think you see your Teslas and your Priuses. There's a time and a place for them, but I don't think the automotive industry by any means is going to go all electric we love our cars in America. There's still a lot of them out there. The car business is still really good. So I think we're just going to keep chugging down that technology line and see what happens. And hopefully we can still keep the human part involved and really grow your business. Like my message has been just trying to keep that retention going because people want to do business with you, not because they have to.
Yeah, man. Do you envision the whole driverless vehicles just driving up to the drive with nobody in there, preset appointments?
I think it's going to happen, Herb. Yeah, I think it's going to happen. I mean, the Toyota already has this technology, right? They're already shooting us, a problem code in the car. So we're already getting that alert. And truthfully, the diagnostic equipment is good enough internally in the car that it can tell us if it say it needs a part, so it can order that part, right, through communication with parts. So technically, yeah, a car could show up, we can have a part on the shelf, and we're just going to need a technician to install it, and off that car could go. I truly think that is going to happen. Yeah.
Wow, man. I mean, it's definitely exciting times to be in the automotive industry for sure. A lot of good changes, I think, that remains to be seen if they're good, but a lot of changes, definitely.
Hey, it's a great field to be in, and I hope you get a lot of listeners, and I hope there's a lot of young talent coming up that really studies the craft, because with podcasts like this and Fixed Ops articles, magazines, there's so many avenues now for information. People just need to invest in themselves. It's like our technicians that we talked about earlier. Get your ASEs, take your manufacturer training. Service advisors should be watching podcasts, listening to podcasts, and managers should be too, and get better. Get better and create a great experience for your team and your customers, and you're going to be successful.
Right on, man. Love that closing message for sure. Well, that's all the time we have for today, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Tim, open invitation. Got to do this again, man. Really appreciate everybody checking this out. And again, don't forget to go to the website, leave us your questions. And that's all we got, folks. As usual, we'll talk later. So you made it all the way to the end. Thank you so much. Just want to remind everybody to go to the website at dealertalk.biz. Leave us your questions. Give us your feedback. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk later.